Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You have one new voice message. New voice messages.
Happy New Year, Helen Bauer. Show New Year 2021. New me. I am gonna be bigger, better, funnier, more hard worker than ever. I'm gonna be so productive, which is why I'm ringing you for a quick hour chat, then I'll play a bit of Candy Crush, do a puzzle, eat a yogurt. But then after all that, honestly, I'm gonna get shit done. New year, new me. Call me back. Bye, bye, bye.
Deleted.
Hello and welcome to Daddy Look At Me.
A podcast where myself, Helen Bauer and Rosie Jones sit down and talk to our favourite people from the world of showbiz about attention, childhood and of course, daddy.
Great to have you here. Now let's crack on with the show.
Morning! Or afternoon, depending on when you're listening.
No, they clearly listen in the morning. You wake up, you go, what do I need to start the day right? Helen and Rosie, it's the Helen and Rosie show.
I just think this is just such a bad way to start your day, listening to both of us screaming, because I met a lovely girl who I know vaguely, she works at the Bill Murray, and she was saying she had her first ever panic attack and she put on our podcast to calm down.
Oh,
and you know when you're like, you fucked it.
No.
That's going to keep you in that state. Like there's other things. Enya.
Is she okay?
No, she looked really manic.
Oh my God. Right, okay. I really want listeners, but if you're having a panic attack right now, turn us off.
There's so many other good podcasts you can... How about that in like Tunnel 29? That's a really nice calming one, I think.
I really like that with the baby shoes.
With the baby shoes? Why do I not remember
that
this?
Is that the German one?
The Berlin Wall one?
Yeah, and one of them lots of baby shoes in the tunnel.
Oh, no.
And they went back and got them years later.
Oh, the real tragedy of Berlin Wall is someone lost a pair of baby shoes. Well, thank you, Rosie, for putting it all in context there. But if you are having a panic attack, turn off, because we're about to get into the absolute meat of the subject at the moment, which obviously is... Princess Diana. The people's princess. I think we can all agree on that. Don't even try joining in right now. Our guest just pointed at himself and it's like, we know that you think she was an attention seeker. Just leave it. She was struggling with a lot of bulimia, so give her some space. I genuinely believe that if she was alive today, the podcast she would have would be fucking life-changing. Because she'd spill the tea.
Yeah. Would she come on our podcast?
I doubt it. I don't think this would be in her world.
I think she'd be good that way. She got a word in edgewise.
I don't think we would have allowed her to speak. She was quite a slow talker, wasn't she?
Yeah. And there's already one of them on the show.
You're measured. You're not slow. It's a very different thing.
Shut up, Diana. We're fucking talking.
Diana, give us space. Let us speak our truth, you fucking bitch.
Diana, look at my nipple.
I am so excited about the next season of The Crown, though, because I really hope they go into the conspiracy theories behind her death. Because as we know, they're actually not conspiracy theories. They're just the truth. The Queen killed her because she was having a Muslim baby. On my fucking life, that's true.
I thought Philip.
No, okay. Philip, it is not involved with it. Philip liked her because they were both outsiders. This is the main misconception of it. The fact that she knew, she left a note for Paul Burrell saying that she was worried something was going to happen with the car. So she knew it was going to happen. The fact there were six cameras on the tunnel that night and they were all turned off, including one which switched off 20 minutes before the accident. Coincidence? I think not. And also, I do think we need to look into the fact that I was there in Paris that night on the 31st of August, 1997. There is no way that's a coincidence. I was involved.
Were you?
I was on a family holiday.
No, I mean, did you kill Diana?
All I'm saying is we don't have any footage of it. I was a sleepwalker at the time. We were staying in a hotel that was relatively close. I could have made it. She liked children. They would have swerved.
Shit. Phil, do you think you killed Diana?
I didn't think.
Look at me when you're telling me.
Well, I would, it were not for the killer gaze in your eyes, which leads me to believe your story completely. I did not, up to this point, I had put the death of Diana down to more prosaic reasons. You know, Occam's razor, the most likely solution is probably the correct one. And that was probably that they were hounded by press and the driver was drunk.
Well, the press were arrested that night and then let go the next morning, so I don't think it was them.
Well, you can't, well, there's nothing to directly charge them for. Helen, you can't be charged for driving a bit. You can't be arrested for driving a bit close to an important car.
Can you not?
Well, no. But I'm just saying, yes, I believe you were behind it now.
Thank you very much. I haven't blinked since the day she died. I refuse to blink until justice is served and I'm put behind bars. That is when I'll be finally happy.
Has she been dead long enough so that I can call myself a people's princess?
Yes, I'd say so, but I wouldn't do it.
I've been trying to get that off the ground.
Well, The Rock waited a certain amount of time before he named his finishing move the People's Elbow, didn't he, out of respect?
Yeah. How long did he wait?
I think about five years, maybe.
Okay, so I can do that. Hello,
we can call this podcast the People's Podcast.
Yes, Daddy, look at me. With Helen Bauer.
And Rosie Jones. And our special. No, we're not going to. It's not going to take off. I just don't think it's worth it.
Rosie Jones, a People's Princess.
And a very special welcome to our guest today. It's the wonderful Phil Wang.
Phil Wang, the King of Hearts. Hi. Hi, everyone.
Definitely try and make that happen. That's more likely, Rosie. The King of Hearts compared to the People's Princess.
Yeah, because the King of Hearts is not actually taken. It's just.
I thought it was.
Queen of Hearts is taken. Queen of Hearts.
Queen of Hearts is taken, but who's the King of Hearts?
It's Queen of Hearts.
The Queen of Hearts and Alice in Wonderland.
Oh.
They off with their head.
Yeah, but Diana was called the Queen of Hearts.
No, she what was she?
Yes, of course she was.
Yeah.
Diana, the Queen of Hearts.
Maybe to you, but for me, she was the People's Princess.
Well, she was both, wasn't she? She had many monikers.
Yeah.
She was like Prince, ironically. Well, not. Well, yeah, she's. Well, yeah. Not ironically. Aptly.
Either way, if Princess Diana's listening out there as a ghost, we'd love to book you as a guest. Please get in contact with our producer, Jack, or Rosie R.I. over Instagram. Realistically, yeah. We're on for it.
But then, Robert. Diana, could you go on Twitter? Because I never look at my Instagram other inbox.
Are you serious? It's the best.
Yeah. I don't get a lot of pictures of vaginas.
Great.
No, because
and also, I know you've looked at some of them. Do not even try that.
They know you viewed it like several times.
Do you ever get any pictures of vaginas in your?
I did. I got I got videos of a lady, a very nice lady in Bristol, who kept sending me videos of her masturbating.
Fair play to her.
Great.
She would not stop. And the first one...
like she wouldn't stop sending them or wouldn't stop? Like it was just one long wank.
It might have been, for all I know.
Fair play to her.
And she was just intermittently filming it and sending me the snippets.
A lot of cramps behind the knee, a lot of focus.
And the first one that she sent, I was like, thank you. I just wanted to be polite. I wanted to be polite, but I also didn't want to, you know, encourage her too explicitly. So I just said, thank you. And then she sent me another. I said, why are you sending me these? And she just said, you know, that she thought I was cute or whatever. Who can blame her? But I thought, okay, that's nice. Thank you. And she just kept going.
But why did you keep saying thank you? Just a dignified silence.
I think I only said thank you once.
Okay, good.
I didn't want to be rude. It was very, you know, she'd really exposed herself. And I didn't, you know.
And now you're married.
And now she is my wife.
That is such a beautiful story.
Yeah.
But before we get into your marriage to the Lockdown wanking lady intense. Of Instagram, we would love to hear about you at the beginning. I love segueing people's childhoods after they've talked about wanking. Yeah. Like, it just feels so natural to me. So how old were you when you first had a tug?
Oh, well, I mean, this is really young. I was really young. I was like... I must have been like 6 or 7 or something.
No, that's the age when you discover that something feels good, but to actually... wank to completion.
Yeah, I wanked to completion.
Ah, sick!
I'm a sexual person. I don't know what to tell you.
A very sexual 6-year-old.
Telling me not to wank is like telling the wind not to blow. It doesn't matter how old I am.
Did you know what you were doing? Or were you like, this feels... nice.
I thought this feels nice. And I also thought, which is quite common, I think, that I was the only one to discover it.
I mean, yeah, I've got stand up about this. It's just that feeling of just sort of like, it's just a me thing. Like, does everyone else know? And this is before I knew there was an end to it. But I wasn't aware we weren't supposed to talk about it. So I was going into school, like, being like, have you tried it? Does it work for you? Like, I thought it was the most magical thing that my body could do. And I remember, like, being excited to go to bed that night to have a rub-a-dub-dub. Living the absolute fucking dream. But I think for boys, it is slightly different. I remember when my friend first wanked to completion, he must have been about 13 and he came into school and he looked so miserable and scarred because he thought he'd broken his penis. And he told me and I told everyone because I thought it was so funny. But like, it is, I think a confident kid is wanking all the time.
Sick!
Well, we've seen kids in buggies who touch themselves. Like, it does... young kids
have
do
we?
Know it's an erotic...
Why are you going out of your way to...
going out of my way.
Have we?
Well, I remember babysitting a boy who would gyrate against me as I would be like Princess Leia and he would have arrested me or something. I'd never seen Star Wars, but from babysitting, you get enough. And he would like gyrate against me. And it wasn't like, he's not old enough to know it's sexual, but he must have felt something. I was like, I'm a child as well. Yeah. Like, it was really uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like what we're programmed with and what we aren't. Like, you were programmed with the idea that it feels nice to rub yourself up against someone, but not with the idea that that coming is breaking a penis. Like, you think that information be pre-built into us, like eating or whatever, but it isn't. It's terrifying.
It's a difficult journey for a young child to take, and particularly a child that we're going to learn a lot about over this podcast, because at 6 years old, you're wanking and you're living your dream. But around that, is there anything else to you, or are you just the wanking kid at school who's not very popular?
The hollow wanking child.
Just fill out the picture for us. You're 6 years old. You're discovering yourself at home. How are you getting on at school?
I went to a few different schools when I was young. So I'm in Malaysia, I think, importantly.
Not right now.
But shout out to Malaysia.
So Malaysia, home of the wank, is where.
Selamat datang to you, Phil. Selamat datang.
Very good. Thank you.
What? How? Half my family are Malaysian. Bit of Bahasa Melayu for you.
I always forget.
Terima kasih.
I forget that.
I know. I forget it as well. Shout out to the Garni Bowers, eh?
For those of you who don't understand Malay, Helen Helen just said white power again. Representing
impressive. The German side of my family as well. So we're in Malaysia, you're Sabah, right?
Sabah, yeah, North Borneo.
Nice.
And so I went to international school for a bit, and then I went to local schools. I was quite an exuberant kid. I was quite eccentric and I think funny and quite strange. And I really, yeah, I think I like to make people laugh. I was obsessed with making funny faces, new cum faces all the time.
Was that like your main thing?
It was my cum face most of the time. But, but no, let's be serious. Well, I just like making people laugh a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But then I went to Chinese school when I was about 8, and that sort of changed everything because it was really like a Chinese school is a very oppressive environment, and that kind of broke my eccentricity and my freedom. And so I, from sort of 10 onwards, I was trying to recapture the old self, but. So I've got like two distinct halves of my childhood, I always think. The sort of freewheeling, happy-go-lucky first half, and then the sort of more careful, kind of afraid of authority second half.
Oh, and but did you still want to make people laugh in the authority, or was it just completely knocked out of you?
Yeah, I did. I was just a bit more fearful about everything. Yeah.
But then what? When you went home, could you be a joker?
I would sort of revert to a jokier version of myself at home. But, I mean, when you're a kid, your school life is such a large proportion of your time.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a good time. But after that, I left Chinese school and it got better.
We've just found ourselves a trauma, Rosie. It wasn't a good time.
Show happy.
I mean, this is everything. Surely, this episode descends into a therapy session. Yeah.
Did you come home crying? Were you lonely? Were you bullied?
I think I was. I was lonely. I was a lonely kid.
Yes.
But childhood is a quite lonely experience, in general.
I mean, I didn't. Did you find it a lonely experience?
No, but. We'll get on to this, I think, because I am a brother and we got on. But more importantly, he was 5 years younger, so a lot of my childhood I basically had a puppet who would do what I said.
Yeah.
So whatever I wanted to do, I would go, oh, Ollie, why don't we eat crisps? And they'll go, yeah.
It's pretty and wild stuff here. Yeah.
It's crazy in Bridlington.
Crazy. And then he will get the crisps and then I would eat them and not give them to him.
Once again, a shout out to Ollie for being the best little brother of all time.
He's not right. He had his birthday that year.
Good for him.
I have a birthday every year, but
all right, Phil.
Don't mean to brag.
No, last week, and I got him a 1,000-page Harry Potter jigsaw puzzle, so we currently.
Which one, Ravensburger
that.
Or Schmidt?
Ravensburger.
Soft clip technology?
Yeah.
Fucking lovely stuff.
Soft clip technology.
Click technology. Click. I'm a big puzzler. And if a puzzle doesn't have soft click technology, I'm not wasting my time with
it. Is that the click between pieces?
It just means that they fit really nicely. There's no confusion as to what part goes with which.
What's the technology?
The technology of the height of the puzzle piece
of the
and
material.
The depth and width of the puzzle piece slipping in. Yeah, the cardboard,
so
the density.
When you fit them together, they just feel great.
Mm-hmm.
For my birthday, my friend, she got me a personalised Ravensburger, which is huge, because huge.
Is this a brand, the Ravensburger?
Yeah.
It's like the Rolls Royce.
It's a big one.
They're pretty much all German, the puzzling brands.
Usually, if you do like a photo portal, you get it from a shit company. But if you go for the Ravensburger, you're paying more, but it's worth it.
So we've just had a message through from producer Jack. Ravensburger premium puzzles. Ravensburger soft click technology guarantees puzzle fun at the highest level. Yeah. Whether you're a beginner tackling a 300-piece puzzle or a pro facing a challenge of up to 40,320 pieces.
40,000?
That, yeah. I believe, if I'm correct, is a Disney challenge. They've got a partnership with Disney, and it's several different Disney scapes with a star border. And it's, you can go down an absolute YouTube hole watching people trying to complete this.
When they say you're pro, like, can you be paid to solve puzzles?
On YouTube you can, if you're really focused.
Of course you can on YouTube. Everything's possible on YouTube,
amazing.
I forget.
But what bullshit is, you keep on getting new puzzles and you still haven't finished the one I lent you last year.
I'm going to do it.
Just do it.
And yours,
lovely it is, Phil. It's a watercolour Beauty and the Beastscape by Thomas Kinklada.
What do you do when you complete them? Do you frame them or you just...
Have a little wank, take a picture, put it on Instagram and then put it back in the box.
Really? You break them all up again and put them back in the box?
Yeah.
Like throwing a prize marlin back into the sea.
Pretty much.
It's worth it for the journey. I'm about to do yours because I just on my personalised one of Moira Stewart and Pat Butcher from EastEnders.
You don't puzzle
then,
Phil?
I could never get behind the concept of the jigsaw puzzle because for me it was just like... I was just fixing else. I was being asked to fix something someone else had fucked up. Like, someone had broken up this picture, and now it was on me to clean up their mess.
Someone definitely went to Chinese school. It's fun, Phil. It's you're building something. You're building something with an end goal.
Yeah. But there's no problem. You've created the problem to be solved.
It doesn't come all together and then it comes broken up.
Yeah, I know. But they made the picture first and then cut it up and then put it in a box.
But basically what you're saying is you refuse to cook and only want ready meals. That's what I'm hearing right now.
No. The food equivalent would be if someone took a beautifully finished meal, broke it up into little pieces and sent me all the little pieces and I had to put them all back together.
Like a HelloFresh box.
Yeah, no, but there's still value you need to add by cooking those things and chopping them up. They haven't disassembled a finished meal for you to then reassemble. They're giving you.
But they haven't. They don't make the puzzle all together. They make each individual. I'm hearing myself. Fuck it.
Fuck, well, I mean, if that is the case, then I think you have a point. But I don't think it is. They
Why
make
are
the picture
you ruining
first.
This for me? This is all what? I have.
To me, it's incredible you haven't considered this already after so many years of jigsaw puzzling.
No, Helen, look at me. Phyllis,
oh my God, I feel like I'm being attacked.
No, Phyllis wrong. It's the enjoyment of putting it together.
Oh my God, I've wasted my life.
No, you haven't.
I've got over 30 at home, Phil. I lost a year. Fucking hell.
It's enjoyable. If you enjoy it, do it. Phil had a traumatic childhood. He's talking shit.
I'd love to see you talk to a serial killer, Rosie. If you enjoy it, do it. That's what matters.
They often do, that's the thing.
You do you.
Thank you, Rosie, that means a lot.
Well, I did at 6 years old, again and again, every day. Thank you. Thank everybody. Back on topic. If you need a guest who will bring your podcast back on topic,
we do.
Book.
Yes.
Book Young Wang. He'll do it.
Did you have siblings?
There she is. See, we can stay on topic, you fucking piece of shit.
I have two younger sisters.
Oh, interesting. So the only boy.
I'm the only boy.
And the leader of the pack.
Yeah.
How was that?
Good. I think it's different if you're the eldest but the only one of a sex, you know. Because I think the leadership comes... I think the brothers lead each other and then the sisters lead each other.
Oh, I'm with you. I've got an older brother and a younger sister, so I've got the exact same family setup that you do.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't feel like... No, I don't feel that way. I think the only practical difference is as the oldest, you have to go through all the shit as your parents are figuring out how to raise a child. So my younger sister, for example, never went to traumatic Chinese school because they figured out that it'll break your soul.
So you see? Yeah, no, I do.
So in that sense, I was a leader in the sense that Russian peasants were the leaders of the Red Army.
Yeah.
They weren't. They were just thrown to the guns first. So in that sense, I was a leader.
I'm the same because I'm the oldest. And my mum and dad treated me like a prototype, not a proper child, in that they... made all the mistakes with me. So then when my brother came, they were like, oh, it's a baby. And they nailed him. My little brother.
But being the oldest and having two siblings, did you ever compete for attention at home? Like, if you're funny and you want to be funny at school, and you know, like, were you trying to like do that at home as well?
A little bit, although I felt there wasn't very much competition because I outshone the others.
Vapid, simple sisters, were they then?
No, I mean, the thing, my sisters, especially the sister right, first sister younger than me, has no interest in the limelight. You know, she plays music. She plays the piano, but never to perform it. She plays it just for herself, which I've never been able to understand.
What sort of a middle child is she? What the fuck?
And so I could never comprehend what the point of learning an instrument was if you weren't going to play in front of an audience. So in that sense, there wasn't any competition because she wasn't all that interested in that kind of attention.
Well, that's the blessing, isn't it, then? So you get to have everything. Like, were you doing school plays and stuff? I can't imagine Chinese school celebrates doing a musical every year.
I didn't know. Didn't do any plays at Chinese school. After that, I went to a non-Chinese school and I was in Mary Poppins. We did an excellent production of Mary Poppins.
Oh, my God. Who were you?
I was Mr. Banks. I was the father.
Oh,
I have never heard of a school doing Mary Poppins. That's fucking sick.
Incredible.
It was. They really went for it. They built like a magic set with like drawers that closed on their own with like a system of pulleys, and we had floating chairs and stuff. It was crazy. It was mad.
That's also a dream role, because A British Bank and The Life I Lead are the best songs in it. They're so fucking good.
And also I had a lisp at the time.
Great.
A British bank is run with precision.
Home expects nothing less.
Requires nothing less.
Requires,
precision,
I'm sorry.
Discipline and rules must be the tools. And I loved it. I loved it. It was my shining moment. I was, I loved singing. I did a lot of singing when I was a kid, and
you're a good singer.
Yeah, I've heard you
sing.
It's fucking
thanks,
amazing.
Helen. I find it really hard to sing now, though, because it's so earnest. And doing comedy, you just become such a cynical bastard.
Yeah. Yeah. And
you find,
don't look at me when you say that. Look at Rosie as well.
I was trying to look at you both as evenly as possible.
Well, pick her.
Yeah, okay. But I focus on you, right, Rachel.
Ouchies.
But it's so it's so embarrassing to do something earnestly and intentionally. So I find it very hard to sing.
But that's weird, because as a kid, like, no one grows up wanting to be the clown. Because when you get into teenage years, you always want to be that dramatic performer, that one that does the intense stuff. Did you not go through that phase?
I think it's different for boys. I think I think for boys, the clown figure is a much more highly valued figure in the group, you know. I think girls, a good sense of humor at that age is not really... I'm speaking on your behalf, and I'm speaking, correct me, but it's not the same.
I agree, because I think, and that this is what is fucked up, like, as teenagers, we just wanted to be fancied. Mm-hmm. And for boys, being the funny one is attractive.
You're
for
right.
girls, whereas if you're a funny girl, that's not attractive.
You're one of the lads.
Yeah.
If you're a funny girl.
Yeah.
I was happy to brand myself in that way, like a very calculated 13-year-old. I was like, I'll be funny then.
Yeah.
Because I think you also, like, I was aware that I was not one of the fuckable teenagers. Yeah. You know, when you're like, you look at your, like, Anna Grant, fuckable teenager. Mm. Emma Colpus, fuckable
Are
shit.
These real people from your
Yeah. Shout out to Anna Grant. Hey, baby.
Anna Grant was a fuckable teenager.
She's now a fuckable adult, but, like, honestly, I'll get a picture of her up for you later and you're going to fucking lose it.
Big fan.
It was in, yeah, we're all big fans.
Hello.
Hi, Anna.
Do you sing when you're alone?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
I sing jazzy versions of any song, and it annoys everyone who hears it. So whatever song is in my head, I'll walk around singing a jazzy version of it.
I think you're like, you to me right now are coming across like a jigsaw puzzle. So you're at Chinese school, you're not having the best time of it, you're not really performing, but you want to be funny, you are pursuing the clown role, you like the clown role, but you're not getting an opportunity to do it. You go to a different school, which is in England now.
Oh, no, I'm still in Malaysia, but a gentler...
A gentler school.
Yeah.
You do Mary Poppins, you get a taste of the stage.
Yeah.
You crush it as Mr. Banks with a lisp.
Yep, smashed it. 5 stars.
At this point, are you thinking, I'm meant to be on the stage?
You know what? And simulating as it is to say yes. At that point, I thought, I've never felt so at home than in this fake
serious?
Home on the stage.
Did it set a fire inside of you?
It did, especially like getting giggles, like getting laughs, because I was playing this. There's just something funny about a really chubby 11-year-old boy with a lisp acting like a strict father.
Yeah,
it's just funny.
Yes,
bouncing in with a briefcase saying, "Where's my tea?" It's just funny, and so I was getting laughs, and the laughs felt good,
and you convinced yourself they were intentional laughs, like they were laughing with you.
Yeah, I meant to get those laughs.
Yeah.
I loved it. And from an early age, laughter was the most valuable response you could get for anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do, yeah. But at the same time, to move someone to tears.
Yeah.
No, I never thought that. Do you?
There's something wrong with me. Because I always lent towards the drama. Like, so in year 9, I wrote a monologue and performed one about a girl being sexually assaulted by her dad.
Wow.
In year 11, for a piece, my stimulus was death. Definitely would always want to do the most dramatic, sad role possible.
But you're so, like, bright and bubbly all the time. You're not like...
But I wanted to be seen as tragic.
Oh, okay. Were you a bit gothy for a bit?
No, I wasn't. I don't know what it was with performance. I think because I was
always...
Were
you just like a drama kid? You were just like a drama kid?
I was a full drama kid.
Right,
I loved it.
But then also there's something about getting laughter.
Yeah.
And bringing people joy.
Oh, by the time I was 16 and doing A-level drama, then all I wanted to do was comedy. That was it. Like, I remember we were the only one in our year and there was 1,500 per year group, so like big year.
Yeah.
Like, we were the only ones that did comedy because everyone else went super dramatic like teenagers.
Yeah. 1,000 per year group?
1,500 per year group.
That's a big school.
And it was like,
If that was a puzzle piece,
it'd be 1,500 pieces.
Yeah.
All right, Phil. That's not, do you know what I mean?
You're bringing maths.
You're being a bit of a prick, to be honest. Phil, we're going to really quickly have a break to play a game. You're going to freak the fuck out about this, okay?
Okay.
What do you think is behind these doors?
Weirdly.
I didn't even think there were doors.
No. Took me a year and a half to realise there were doors as well.
It's just a padded wall with a couple of silver knobs on it.
But what do you think is behind it? Oh my God, I'm so excited.
I used to hate based this on, game.
Based on the height of the doors, I'd say a dartboard.
I had to be embarrassed, you little fuck.
It's a window.
Oh, okay. It's a window.
What? We're still yet to get the reaction I wanted.
It's a wall. Huh?
Great song. Yeah,
it's
no.
Because when you close it, it becomes a wall. This is what they were talking. It's a window, and then close the door.
Jack, can
it's
we cut wall. Him saying that out so then I can like edit myself saying that into every other episode of opening it? Because that's actually really clever, and I want that for me.
We
haven't closed it fully though. I think we're going to lose some sound. There we go. No, still not completely.
You go fuck yourself. I don't know why you think you're in charge.
Look, if anyone should
this
be able
is why
to-
you were bullied at school.
If anyone here should value the secure fitting together of two pieces.
Oh,
it should be you. Do you not think?
There you go, yeah.
You know what? Fair play to your film. I'll take it. I'll bloody take it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, Phil. We've played Mary Poppins. We've got a taste of the stage. We know we want attention. We know we want people to laugh. How are we seeking that out? Are we doing it to like flirt with people? Are we doing it for friends? Are we seeking out more roles?
Great.
There was not much scope for comedic opportunity in 90s, early 2000s Borneo.
That doesn't sound right. You're kidding?
And I remember when I was a kid, like the first thing I wanted to be was a clown. I wanted to be like an actual oldie style clown who ran around a circus and all that sort of thing.
Nose.
Big
huge
old nose, big old honker.
Flower.
You know the type.
Hair.
Big old
hair.
But like at school, I was very studious. I was a very good student. And so I wasn't really interested in being funny in class.
Okay.
I really just paid attention to the lessons and just did my homework and did great at exams mainly. That's all I did really at school.
Congratulations.
And thank you.
Yeah.
That's how I got here today.
Amazing.
So I was good at school. So I wasn't like a class clown or anything. I enjoyed comedy partly for the mental challenge that it is. It's a lot of logic that goes into it. And part of the exhilaration of getting a joke right is the feeling that you're clever and that everyone is going, that was clever. You are clever. And for that moment, you are the most clever person in the room.
Yeah.
And that, I think that element is maybe for me the most intoxicating part of it, maybe. Which is unfortunate because it's a bit, it's not a particularly pure impulse to want to feel like the smartest person.
Yeah, it's
in the
a bit fuddy-duddy.
It's a bit psychopathic, is what it is.
But then, I'm sorry, I'm obsessed. But I find that is a lot like a jigsaw puzzle. In your head, you have all the pieces, and it's just making sure you give them enough pieces so they can see the picture.
Amen.
You're in control.
That's a great analogy. Here is a person who gets jigsaw puzzles.
Thank you.
I jigsaw more than she fucking does.
I do.
I had puzzlers back for a full month this year. A full month of puzzlers back. It is a thing.
What's puzzlers back?
Like, I swear I've grown like a little hunch.
Oh, I thought you meant like a bunch of puzzlers came back.
No, puzzlers back somewhere is when you're puzzling for so long that when you sit back, your back goes like, oh, puzzlers back. Self-diagnosed, obviously. Right, can I stay on topic, please?
Yeah.
Or do you want to try and steer it back?
No, you can.
No, you do it.
No, you. Goose.
What? Goose?
Goose.
Girls.
Love.
Yeah.
Attention. Mm-hmm. I was teenager Billy Wank. Was he a hit with the ladies? And did you ever use its comedy to woo the ladies?
Well, as we've established, I was a very horny boy from a very young age.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
But those first few years of puberty were not successful. I was quite awkward, I was shy. I had body image issues.
Yeah, had a lisp.
I had a lisp, which I wasn't even aware of until I heard our cast recording of Mary Poppins.
Oh, fuck, yeah,
and
yeah,
and I went,
yeah.
What the fuck is that? And I wouldn't say I was a hit by any measure. When I started going to boarding school in Brunei, which is right next door to Malaysia, for GCSEs. And there I kind of came out of my shell. I did loads of singing. I became a kind of a big name on campus for the singing, and through that, I sort of broke through the barriers to female attention that I used to suffer, but that didn't hold all the way through my move to the UK, and so I got a second wind, as it were, when I started doing comedy. I started, my first gig was at school when I was like 17, 18.
Really?
Yeah. I went to quite a nice, a school that was rich enough to have a sort of drama department that could put on a comedy night. And I did a set there.
Oh, and then how many and minutes? Then
I, 5 minutes was no mostly way. Like stolen material. I didn't really understand how it worked.
Okay.
And then we had another bigger show in the assembly hall, and that I wrote like 10, 15 minutes from scratch, all about the school, about the teachers, about students.
Oh!
My greatest gig.
And at that point, did you know that you wanted to be a comedian? Like, were you focused on it?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty
Holy
much.
Shit, that's amazing. Yeah. I don't know even if I would have thought I want to be a comedian at that age, whether I would have had the balls to fucking get up and do it.
At that point, like, I wasn't a complete loser at school, but I wasn't one of the cool kids. And to the extent that I didn't really have anything to lose by doing it. And again, it was about showing everyone, I am quite confident. I am a laugh.
Yeah.
And I am smart. And that's kind of what got me into it. But after a while, you start doing it for its own sake.
Yeah.
Because you love it. And because if you never... It's a challenge that never ends. It's a jigsaw puzzle that you can never fully complete.
Because you went to Cambridge, right? So
yeah.
I'm now thinking that you're one of the people that went to Cambridge to be in Footlights to do the big degree.
It was a major element of it. But part of the reason I chose engineering because I thought I had the best... It was the subject I probably had the best chance of getting in for.
Yeah.
And I liked it enough.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting enough.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to do comedy.
Oh my! And you went straight into Footlights.
So the Footlights, the way the Footlights works, or at least worked when I was there, was they have something called the Virgin Smoker in the first couple of weeks of term, which are for people who've never done show, and you just like everyone gets a spot on this. On the show.
Virgin Smoker.
Yeah, so you get on, and
I find it so fascinating.
Well, I actually had a car share with Phil and Pierre, and it was an absolute lesson in the Footlights. And Jack is messaging me, being like, stop talking about puzzling, talk about Footlights.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it now, Jack. Because it is fucking fascinating. It's a lot of people. And for anyone who's not aware, like going to Cambridge and being part of Footlights is the closest thing you can get to doing a comedy degree, as it were. Like, you're in a world where there's a lot of performance opportunities, there's a lot of people that know a lot about comedy, you'll be challenging each other and pushing each other. It's sort of like a open mic circuit whilst you're studying younger.
That's correct. I wouldn't say that we all knew as much about comedy as anyone who was quite obsessed with it for a long time, but we didn't have like comedy teaches anything. It was all, we all just learn
no,
from
but
each other.
You're all, like, I think most, I mean, I didn't go to university, but I imagine there's a couple of comedy fans, but they've got to find each other, put on a night, whereas at Cambridge, there's something built in, which
That's
is
right.
like a society.
But then I, but lots of people just started their own. Like, I started my own one for the college, my own gig. And and so they, you end up with a circuit of gigs just in the colleges, and so you end up, I was
what
pretty
was
busy,
your night
you know.
Called?
You I was at King's College, and I called it the King's Jest.
Of course you fucking did. Brilliant, the King's Jest. And would you host it?
I would host, yeah. And we'd get a couple of guest headliners in and come students in. And
who did it?
Ed Gamble did one.
No!
But he was quite involved with comedy at Cambridge for a couple of years. He directed a show or two. Yeah.
Oh, was he so at Cambridge?
Him. Yeah, I've known Ed for a long time.
No way.
But he didn't go to Cambridge. He went to Durham, but he was involved. Because we end all the comedy societies from Cambridge, Oxford, Durham, Leeds, Bristol. And those are the big comedy universities.
Holy shit.
So you end up knowing each other.
Yeah, because there seems to be a big group of you.
That they know each other really well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rosie
went
to Huddersfield. Did you ever have anything to do with Huddersfield?
We were not aware of the Huddersfield Society comedy.
Yeah, we didn't do societies. We just went to the one club, Camel, and just drunk BKs.
Fuck it.
That's where you got a hump. Was that the slogan?
Yeah. Oh, no, look at me. I didn't fucking go there. I chose dignity and not going to university than going there. Fucking hell.
I am.
Camel. Nightclub called Camel.
Camel. And you go, bring Camel. Yeah. Because.
Is that because once you go once, you don't have to go back for ages?
It's like a bit desperate, wasn't it? That was just trying to happen.
I'm trying.
That wasn't happening.
Yeah, it's
just
not quite. It's a bit tenuous.
At the end of my degree, I got the award for the best writer in my year, and I was like, "Well, yeah." Because it's all disappeared.
That is disgustingly arrogant, but also congratulations.
Congrats. That's really good.
Tell you what's happening, Phyllis. I'm actually really happy now because I feel like your life story, you got a chance to go to Footlights and finally fulfill your comedy potential.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
You were there. Were you? Did you feel that as well? Like, this is my time. I'm the funny one. I am running my own night. I want to be part of the society.
To an extent, but you're also. I also found myself in university with a bunch of people who were funnier than me.
Name names.
More commented than me. Well, I mean, I don't know about like more, but you're with people who are challenging you. You don't feel like you're the funniest person there. Same as you don't feel like the smartest. You go through your life thinking you're the smartest person at school, then you go to, a university like that, and suddenly you realize, oh, I'm actually quite stupid compared to the smartest of the smartest.
I think sometimes being a stand-up comedian can be quite lonely because you're out there on your own. But to have that beginning and for you all to be supporting each other.
I don't think we were supporting each other.
Are you kidding? They're highly intelligent, competitive kids. Like, good luck tonight, break a leg.
We were not. I wouldn't say we were supportive of each other.
I wouldn't have guessed you'd have been that supportive. I mean, I imagine later on in your career, but like at the beginning, you're all wanting make it.
Oh yeah, at the beginning, I was quite competitive, but I like that. I think it spurred me on. But the one thing that Footlights does not prepare you for is like the circuit gigs. You're coming up doing stand up in lovely ancient colleges, everyone's really respectful and just quiet and attentive.
Yeah.
And then you go out, you graduate, and then you do,
Glasgow, stand on a Saturday night.
Right, yeah. Or like up the creek on a Friday or whatever. Oh. And then you're like, oh shit, okay, there were some elements of this job that I have not been prepared for.
And you're making a really clever observation about Schrodinger's cat, and they were like, go fuck yourself, son. That's the thing, I didn't think about this, but if you're like doing Footlights, you're playing the same audiences pretty much.
Yeah.
Like every college, there's not going to be that much of a difference.
Yeah. It's definitely a comfortable start to your comedy life, but it's also a high standard start. So, swings and roundabouts.
I want to hear more about it, but we've got to wrap it up because we've gone way too long.
Have we?
We have.
I thought we barely got going.
No, we spent about 15 minutes on the fucking window. I'm not surprised.
We talked about puzzles for a disgusting amount of time. And even Jack's like, come on now, leave it, guys.
Really?
Yeah. And also, you're about to piss yourself.
Yeah. I've had two coffees and I'm about to piss myself.
Right, Daddy, this is going to be the quickest trip ever. I'm assuming the first stop is the toilet.
Yeah. Billy, I am Daddy.
I know.
You know this. Yep. Everyone knows this.
Greet your father.
Hello, Daddy.
Thank you.
Hello, Phil. We're going on a day trip.
Okay.
And the beginning of this day trip, I feel is more for me. But we are going back to Cambridge.
Oh.
And what does your night still exist?
It did for a couple of years after I left, but I don't think it does anymore, sadly.
Well, now it does.
Oh!
Holy shit! I want to come on this one. This sounds great.
You're coming. So we are putting on our comedy night, your comedy night, and me and Helen. For one night only, we're going to join the Footlights.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that, actually, just for a day.
It's a bit against protocol, but...
Phil!
Okay, I've got an A-level.
Right, okay. For what? Okay, we'll make an exception.
I won the writing award at Huddersfield Uni. The Footlights will be lucky to have me.
The benefit of the listener, Rosie, is screaming with her hands on her head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know what that happened. You look like you're reclining. You look like you're relaxing and shouting at me.
Shut up and let Daddy take you on a trip. Yeah. What the fuck is wrong with you right now?
Who are you in this? If Rosie's daddy, who are you, Helen?
Your little sister.
Yeah. Baby.
Horrible.
Definitely bigger than you.
Awful. Enormously larger. Little sister. Terrifying.
So we read
like a magpie. I don't know what those birds
are. I'm bigger than you, Phil!
What are the birds that infiltrate nests and are much larger than the other chicks? Jackdaw or cuckoo?
That's what a cuckoo does. It knocks a baby out the nest.
Okay, well, I'm aggressive. there we go.
Yeah.
I've got an aggression problem. Daddy.
So... Cambridge, we're having a lovely time. We have a comedy night. It's amazing. And then we go home and the three of us guess what we do.
We stage our own production of Mary Poppins.
We do a jigsaw.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was coming, to be honest.
This is so not a treat for
Phil. So what?
I mean, we've really glazed over the gig element of the story. I thought that was going to be the central focus.
Basically, what I've done, I got Ravensburger on speed dial, and they've sent a photographer to the Cambridge gig, and they're taking a photo of the three of us on stage. Performing, and they made it into a jigsaw So in the evening, we do a jigsaw of our gig.
That is really nice.
And then we watch Mary Poppins.
It's a long night, but it sounds fun.
A long night. We can bash that puzzle out in an hour if we focus.
Yeah, but we'll be fine. Phil Wank, thank you.
For not saying anything and allowing us just to talk about puzzles. For any Phil fans who are listening, apologies for not listening.
I don't do enough podcasts where I can just sit back and listen. So this was was really nice.
Fuck you. Can you tell us your social media handles, even though realistically anyone listening to this already follows you?
Yeah.
But why not?
Not necessarily
funsies.
True at all.
Also, tell us about Bud Pod.
Yeah. Oh, Bud Pod is me and Pianavelli. We chat shit quite literally every dang week.
It's a lot of shit, but you will learn something as well.
Yeah. It's fun stuff. I'm on Twitter. I am at Elon Musk. Just kidding. I'm at Phil N. Wang, N for November. And I'm on Instagram at WangPix with an X at the end. WangPix.
Fucking amazing. So if you're not following Phil, give him a follow. If you don't listen to Bud Pod, where have you been? It's great. You'll laugh, but you'll also learn a bit about history, which always comes as a surprise. It does. I genuinely learned stuff. And I've been like, why the fuck am I listening to this podcast about this specific battle? It is a history podcast. Yeah. It 100% is.
It's a secret history podcast.
Right, before Daddy pisses herself, thank you so much.
Thank you, Phil. Billy, one.
Thank you, Daddy and Sister.
Bye!
Feed the birds.
Tuppence a bag. Tuppence.
No, tuppence. Because they say tuppence twice. Just leave it. It's not even worth it. Bye.
Bye.
You have one new voice message. New voice messages.
Hi, Red. It's Helen Bauer. Come on my podcast. Please. I mean, realistically, like, what have you got going on? Love you. Bye.
Deleted.